The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things. Hello. Welcome to Exposing the Masters Within, the one and only hour on radio or the internet dedicated solely to helping you expose yourself. My name is John Schulte. I'm here to serve you, to help you to know more of the truth about you. It's often said, looks can be deceiving. And we all know that the surface of things is, by definition, shallow. So thanks for joining me today as we journey through the looking glass to explore what's on the other side, to explore what's beneath the surface. We're here together to discover, uncover, and recover our masters within. You knew your mastery much more fully when you signed up for your on-earth sojourn. But you mostly forgot it soon after leaving the cozy confines of your mother's womb. You've rediscovered some inkling of it, or you wouldn't be listening to me now. So, it's time to remember the masters we are. It's time to reclaim the power we have. It's time for Exposing the Masters Within. Let's get started.
Today is Sunday, March 31st, 2013. For those listening live, and of course it's whatever time you might be listening, if you're listening to the recording, welcome either way. And all of you for whom that has meaning. And we'll be talking a little bit about the meaning, and the meaning of meaning perhaps even, as we go on here today. But before we jump into that, let's jump into connection. And as always, we start by going in first to open up into a greater connection, a greater experience of our divinity, of our inner mastery, of our power. Think about it whatever way you'd like. And to do that, just allow yourself to focus into the intention that I am choosing to expand my experience of my divinity right now. I'm choosing to open and allow my experience of my power to be more present in my consciousness. And some of you might focus on your heart to do that, and some on the dantian or the solar plexus, but focus in whatever way works for you. And allow your breathing to be easy as you expand that experience. And it may be a very subtle shift, but that's all right. The intention is opening the door. So, as you allow yourself to expand that, allow it to expand on all levels of your being, the physical dimension, the emotional dimension, the mental dimension. Expand it out throughout your aura or your energy field. And even allow it to flow into all of your relationships, bringing more divinity into your relationships is only going to help them. So, allow yourself to honor that opening and know that it will remain open while we are gathered here together today. And let's continue on, continue this opening process. And the next level of opening that we're going to do today is, as always, into our Mother Earth, into greater connection with our Mother Earth. So once more, open up in whatever way you feel best able to do so, through the feet, through the root chakra, through the cells of the skin, whatever way works best for you to open, to receive the love and support of our Divine Mother Earth. And just let yourself breathe that in. And once more, allow it to fill you on all levels, at the physical level, the emotional level, the mental level, throughout your entire energy field, all layers and aspects of your aura. And again, allow that to flow down, that energy to flow down into all of your relationships. The more connected and supported you're feeling in your relationships, the more empowered those relationships are going to be for you. So just allow that to flow there as well. And while you are breathing that flow through, open up into your own gratitude. Gratitude for being alive and in body at this time. Gratitude for being here as we transform individually and collectively and planetarily into a heightened, higher awareness of the divinity that we all are. And allow that thanksgiving, allow that gratitude to flow back down to our Mother Earth. And as you do so, notice if it's at a large enough volume to notice, notice that as you step into that gratitude, you open up and can receive more of her love and support coming to you. And breathe with that. And while you're breathing with that gratitude, open up as well to the energy of your love. Whatever you love in this lifetime, open up to that, whether that's another person or a way of being, whether it's a relationship or an idea, whether it's walking the spiritual path or even listening to this program. Allow that love to come up and allow yourself to share that with her, because if she were not here holding that space for us, this dimension that we call planet Earth, this physical reality, we would not be able to have these experiences that we love. And so allow yourself to share some of that love with her, even as she is sharing love with you. And again, notice if it reaches the conscious threshold, notice that as you share that love, you open up further to receive her love and support into you. And again, remembering that these connections with her are going to remain open throughout the time that we share here together, we will move on to open the next connection as well, which is the connection with our support team in the multidimensions, our angels and guides, our masters and teachers, all those other spiritual beings of light, of the Christ consciousness, etc., who are here aiding us, supporting us as we walk this path. And we open up to them to receive their love and support. And again, open up in whatever way works best for you. Some it will work best through the heart, some the third eye, some the crown, some other way. But in any case, what you're doing, what we're doing, is opening up to allow that energy of love and support to flow through us, to fill us physically, emotionally, mentally, filling our entire energy field, all the layers of our aura, all aspects of our being. And allow that love and support to flow down as well into the energy of each and every one of your relationships. For the more we feel supported by those guides and angels, those divine helpers, the more we will be in our power in our relationships. And once more, open up your gratitude and your love. Gratitude for all that they've helped you to do. Love for all that you've experienced, that they have supported you in experiencing. And just let that flow back to them and feel the open space created in you as you allow your love and gratitude to flow to them. All right. Wonderful. So now that we are individually connected to the earth, to our guides, etc., let's connect more consciously directly to each other and open up into the connection with the Exposing the Masters Within community, and allow yourself to connect with the shared intention that we have of exposing our mastery, of exposing our divinity. And in order to expose it, we have to discover it. And the step in between discovery and exposure is experience. The more we open to experience our divinity, the more it automatically flows out of us, the more it automatically is exposed in our life. And so feel that energy of that shared intention supporting you, buoying you as you walk this path as an individual. You walk along a lot of others. They're around you. They're with you. Some may be further ahead. Some may be further behind. That's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. We are all fully divine. We are all waking into our mastery. And each step we individually take supports every other step that every other one of us is taking. So let yourself feel the lifting that that energy of shared intention can bring. And feel the energy of your intention going out and joining that. Joining that support for others. And the gratitude. Let yourself feel the gratitude for that support and let that flow back out as well. Adding to that energy. As we receive each other's gratitude, we can, if we choose, open into a deepening experience of our divinity. And let's expand yet again. This time to all of the light workers, the conscious light workers, those who are consciously walking a path, seeking, opening into, expanding, owning, sharing empowerment. First within themselves and then in supporting those around them. Because we cannot give what we do not have. So let's open up into that level of support shared by all the light workers on the planet. Everyone who is consciously seeking empowerment and supporting empowerment in others. And allow yourself to breathe that in and feel that support. Feel the support of that shared intention lifting you, buoying you, aiding you in opening more fully into your divinity and into the expression of your divinity. And let's expand out one more time, and this time we're going to encompass and connect with all of humanity, everyone who's walking this planet, everyone who is dealing with the issues of being in a physical body in this time of transition. Everyone in a body right now, somewhere down inside them, some it's very loud, some it's very quiet, some it's almost non-existent, but I believe when it becomes non-existent, the person chooses to leave the body. But what I'm talking about is the desire for things to be better, to improve, to expand. Doesn't matter in what area of life. That desire, I would say, is universal. For things to be better in the next moment than they are in this one. And so we can connect with that as well. That intention, that desire creates intention, and that intention we can also use, we can connect with, we can feel the lift of that intention. And allow yourself to feel that as well. All right. So, thank you for that, opening up with me in that way, connecting in that way. It's always a good way to start, at least for me anyway. And I certainly appreciate your energy and your support out there. As I'm saying every program, I can't do this without you, and that is absolute truth. Now, this is an interesting day for me. Every year when Easter rolls around, I'm reminded of lots of things. One is being raised Roman Catholic and all of the associations that come with that at Easter. And starting weeks and weeks ago with Ash Wednesday, the reminder that we are physical and we come out of nothing into a physical body and go back into nothing and move through. Let's see, Lent, yes. The terminology is still there. Move through Lent, a time of giving up, giving something up. It was always a challenge as a child going through Catholic school, being asked to give something up. And it had to be something that would be meaningful, that would feel like a sacrifice. That's kind of the goal of it, to sacrifice, so that we could come into alignment with what the Catholic Church looks at as the purpose of Jesus' life, which was his suffering and sacrifice on the cross, to take on all of our sins, and then to overcome them by being resurrected on Easter Sunday. And yet, I find the further I go on this path, the more consciousness I come into, the more awareness I come into. It's not that the story doesn't have power, but I find it very interesting that the emphasis that the Catholic Church puts on it, and much of Christianity, to me, is misplaced. The focus is on the suffering and the death. And the focus is on their idea, their interpretation, that was to save us. And in order for that to be true, they had to go into this belief pattern that sits underneath Catholicism and much of the rest of Christianity, that there is an inherent flaw in us as individuals and as a species, that there's something wrong with us to start with. And I find that to be very disturbing. Not in the sense that it keeps me up at night. I find it disturbing the degree to which that permeates our culture, and as the Western culture has spread across the world, how much it permeates human consciousness out there. This idea that we are inherently flawed. Now, I don't have any biological children of my own. I've got nieces. I've had stepkids. And I find that such a laughable and somehow sad way to look at humanity. Laughable in the sense that I've held my nieces shortly after they were born. I've held other babies. I've been around children. And to think that they're evil, that there's something wrong with them to begin with, is just, seems so wrong-headed to me. Seems like such an obvious untruth. And yet, that sits underneath so much of Western culture through the Christian perspective. And I look at things like Easter. And maybe it's because I disconnected from the Catholic Church so young. even though I went through Catholic high school even, so up to 18, but I wasn't a true believer in the Catholic faith after the age of maybe 12. But I look at things like Easter, and what stands out is the symbolism of Easter that is most prominent, which is rabbits, eggs, and candy. And if we flip over to the other major holiday in the Christian year, Christmas, yes, the manger is there, the birth symbolism of Jesus, but the biggest things are the tree and the lights and the presents. And yes, there's always a call for remembering that Jesus is the reason for the season, but that's not what has the power for most people. And that brings me to what I feel called to talk about today. As if I haven't been talking for a while already, but it brings me to the idea of symbolism and the power of symbolism. And perhaps most importantly, the prevalence and the importance and the subliminal nature of it. So let's jump into that a little bit, shall we? If we start with Easter, since we're here on Easter, and we go to the symbols, the bunny and the egg, and I'm not sure where candy came into it, but other than people like sweets. But if we look at the rabbit and the egg, what they are expressions of is what happened a very long time ago as Christianity was trying to spread, as they were trying to get the message across to pagans and heathens and unbelievers of all stripes and kinds. It was a policy of the Catholic Church to appropriate the symbols and the celebrations of these other spiritual communities. And so, well, even the name Easter, that has nothing to do with Christianity at all. It has nothing to do with Jesus, has nothing to do with his life, death, resurrection, any of that. It comes from the celebration. Well, it comes from the goddess Eostre, and I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but she's a fertility goddess whose symbols just happen to be the rabbit, because they are so known for procreating and procreating and procreating, and the egg. And if you go across the so-called primitive cultures, you go across the pagan cultures where they were celebrating in their spirituality the cycles of the seasons, where they were celebrating. What were they celebrating at this time of year? Well, spring is here. It's beginning, at least. It's beginning. There's still some snow on the ground. I can look out the window and see it here in New Hampshire. And yet, we're up in the 50s. We were even hit 60 yesterday. And so spring is beginning. And so the pagan holidays were celebrations of that. They were celebrations of rebirth. They were celebrations of fertility. The egg, that's about fertility. The rabbit, that's about fertility. It's about celebrating the desire for the rebirth of the life-sustaining environment around us as we headed on into summer, etc. Well, what did they do? The Catholic Church appropriated those symbols. Maybe it wasn't all conscious. Who knows? Maybe it was partly because those cultures didn't want to give that up. And so in the spring, when it came around, maybe they were celebrating what came to be called Easter, the resurrection. Maybe they were celebrating that, and they were celebrating these fertility things. We humans have a hard time letting go of what we grew up with sometimes. And so maybe it just got crosswired somewhere along the way. We can give the benefit of the doubt, but let's take a look at it. How convenient that these symbols are symbols of rebirth. The egg and the rabbit, they're symbols of the ongoing nature of things. The connection with the spring is a symbol of rebirth. Well, what is that? That's resurrection. It's resurrection. It's what happens when those bulbs that got planted into the ground the fall before come forth out of nowhere. Resurrection out of the dead earth, out of the winter earth where nothing was going to grow. And probably this is not news to many of you, these particular pieces being appropriated by the church in that way, so that what they were preaching became more palatable to those they were trying to convert. Quite frankly, that's a much more pleasant way than other ways that were tried along the way. Death to those who did not convert, as when the Spanish kicked the Jews out of Spain around the time of the Inquisition. But that's a different thing. Or when they burned the so-called witches, some of whom may have been witches in the terminology as we use it now, but many of whom probably weren't. They may have been herbalists. They may have simply been women, especially, who were not willing to kowtow to what the church was putting on. But the symbols matter. Now, I have to define here, I guess, what I'm talking about when I say symbol. Because I think it's even much bigger than the way most people might think of it. So if I'm trying to define symbol in the largest sense, the broadest sense, it's something that when we come across it has additional meaning to us other than the obvious. And so an egg can just be an egg. It can just be breakfast or something that you put in a cake mix, or it can be a symbol of fertility. It can be a symbol of possibility. It can be a symbol of the new or the very beginning of things. It can be a symbol in multiple ways. It can be a symbol of the exploitation of chickens, if you're a member of PETA. So one of the problems that we have is that symbols, there are some symbols that are seemingly fairly universal. Let's talk about one that is, well, embedded on the consciousness of Americans and much of the rest of the world since World War II, and that's the swastika, associated with Nazis and associated with all of the evil and the stuff that they did then, all of the barbarism of the Holocaust. And yet, that's an ancient symbol. It's an ancient symbol that definitely was used by the Hindus, if it wasn't created by them, thousands of years ago. And it is a powerful symbol, which is why the Nazis appropriated it as their symbol. Now, I don't know the history of symbolism enough to be able to tell you what exactly that symbol stood for or stands for in the Hindu or the other Eastern religions. But it's a symbol of power. And that's why it was taken on and used. And now it has become a symbol for those of us who look back on World War II and the Holocaust with horror. it's become a symbol of horror. It's still a powerful symbol, but the meaning has been changed. And that's another thing about symbols that is important to note, to understand, is that symbols are what we make of them. The very point that what the thing is, the shape that we call the swastika, that symbol does not mean the Holocaust. Before the Holocaust existed, it did not mean that at all. And yet, it's embedded in our consciousness. That's the first place we go. I know that this symbol existed long before Hitler came to power and the Nazis took it on. I know that, and yet it is so deeply embedded in me, I can't help but think of it before the much later knowledge that this is an ancient symbol comes to the surface. And it may just be a split second, but that's another aspect of the power of symbol, is that they operate from very deep levels, unconscious levels within us, and they operate instantaneously. And they can operate for the positive or the negative, or for the neutral and the empowered, if you want. Hopefully we'll get to that as well as we go on here today. But I like to take a moment and lift the hood, shall we say, peel back the curtains on symbolism and go further. Because in the deepening process that I've been doing, we've been working with the third eye chakra in this round, and symbolism has been talked about quite a bit in those sessions. I'm not sure how much it was in the quickening session, but definitely the private deepening sessions, it's been there a lot. And so it's been in my consciousness a lot. And in most ways, everything, or nearly everything, I haven't quite come across something yet that didn't work this way. I'm not saying I couldn't. But I believe that pretty much everything is symbolic. The very fact that you're finding meaning in anything I'm saying, presuming there's meaning here to be found, is because we have agreed to a certain set of symbols. In other words, every word I'm saying, if you're understanding it, it's because you have the same, or most likely a similar, understanding of what the word symbolizes. In other words, the word for chair is not the same thing as the chair itself. If it were, it would be the same word in every language. Instead, we have those five letters, C-H-A-I-R, that come together, each of those individual letters being a symbol unto itself, which has one or more possible pronunciations individually, and then different pronunciations as we collect them together, and then depending on the order we put the letters in, they come to whatever the meaning is of that, or the multiple meanings of that, since chair can mean so many different things. If I say chair, what comes into your mind? What kind of chair? Lounge chair, desk chair, easy chair, sofa, recliner, throne. Throne, that's an interesting one. Embedded with other layers of power, and yet for some people that's embedded with layers of laughter as well. Because that's what they call the toilet. And so when I think about this kind of thing, I'm constantly amazed that we ever communicate anything to each other and be understood. because of so many layers of symbolism that are going into everything as we try to communicate with each other. And ultimately, no matter what word I'm using and no matter what symbol I'm using, there are going to be other associations for you that I don't have. That I don't have. And there are things that are going to bother you that I might do that they don't bother me, or I wouldn't do them. One that I find very interesting is when someone gets upset or even offended. I've had people get offended when I'm talking, or especially when I'm channeling, and the being I'm channeling chooses to use profanity. Why? Because those profane words we've given a lot of power to. They are symbolic. They're symbolic of many things. They're symbolic of perhaps disrespect of the person they're being directed at, or they're symbolic of disrespect toward the social order and the structure that we're all agreeing to so that we can get along in the world. They're symbolic of someone who's not necessarily well-educated or well-spoken, vulgar. They're symbolic of the lower classes. They're symbolic of multiple things. But that's the way the world is. And for me, when this comes up, when I'm sitting with this topic of symbolism, I want to peel away the layers of symbolism. And get to what the core truth is. And that's one heck of a process. But for me, that's another piece of this process that we're walking as we're walking toward a more direct experience and expression of ourselves as divine beings, is owning our experience and yet being willing to look at it and redefine it, to change the associations that we have with particular symbols. In working in this deepening process with people, a number of the sessions, the swastika has been a symbol that has been brought forward for them to work with. Well, in order for them to work with it, they're going to have to clear any negative associations they have to get the full benefit out of the energetic power of the symbol that is much older than the Nazis. And in many ways, that is what this process is of walking forward on our path. Someone treats me a certain way. I have turned being treated that way into a symbol of my victimhood. And so it upsets me, it makes me mad, and it draws that experience to me more and more and more until I can change the symbolism, until I can get out of perceiving myself in the archetype of the victim. We're stripping away our symbolism of past pain so that we can get to the place where we are experiencing each moment as a new thing, without all the past associations, without all the past baggage. And that's another way to think about our baggage that we're carrying with us. It's where, well, for instance, this happens a lot in the so-called battle of the sexes, which is such an interesting phrase to me. Because ultimately, the battle is to be understood, even though physically, we are different. We're wired different. We're all individuals. But someone who is a female in this life by virtue of being female, will have a different experience than I have or can have in this lifetime. Unless they make some amazing strides in reproductive science, I will never be giving birth to a baby in this lifetime. I will never have a menstrual cycle. I may have other hormonal cycles, that is scientifically debatable, but I will never deal with those two things. I will never deal with the possibility that any sexual encounter could result in my body going through the changes of pregnancy. Having that in the background every time I was approaching sexuality or sexual experience would definitely change my approach to it. It would change how I felt about it. How it would change it, I can't know. That it would change it seems self-evident to me. And so we have our reality. You're either male or female. And to be understood by someone who does not come from that same reality, that same physical reality, that's a process. Part of that process for me is this exploration of symbols. It's this exploration of, well, what matters here? What is the truth underneath what's being said? What is the experience it's being said from? I'm willing to guess that every one of you has had at least one conversation in your life where you've said something that you thought was extremely innocuous, and it upset the other person incredibly. Why? Well, it pushed a button. Why? What was the button? It's not about what specific words you said in general. I mean, ultimately it is. But it's because what those words meant to you were not the same thing that they meant to the other person. I'm not talking about when you were trying to be provocative or when you're in the midst of the heat of an argument and you say something and it upsets the other person. I'm talking about something that you had no idea why it upset that other person. Because those words were loaded by the other person's symbolism. Going back to that idea of the battle of the sexes. There are some people, some women, for whom all men are evil. All men are bad. All men are to be mistrusted. Well, that's her experience. And there are some men for whom that's going to be the same about all women. Can't trust them. That comes out of their personal belief systems. It comes out of their personal programming. It comes out of their past experiences. It comes out of their symbols. Now, perhaps there are more men with that underneath than women toward the opposite sex. Certainly in Catholicism, there is misogyny. Is that the right word for hatred of women? Anyway, because they've done a good job of blaming Eve for all the problems that happened later. She ate the apple. She took it to Adam. We got kicked out. Blah, blah, blah. Original sin. Blah, blah, blah. It's all the woman's fault. Again, symbolism. Symbolism. The snake. The snake. The symbol of evil. Goes back to that story in the Garden of Eden. And maybe it comes from before and got imposed on that story as well. But we know it from there. Very deeply in us. It's an almost archetypal image. The snake in the grass. You call someone a snake in the grass, it's because they can't get any lower. Can't be any worse. And they're sneaky on top of it. And so, I guess as we come close to the point where I need to stop rambling and start channeling, I would toss this idea out to you and leave it in your ballpark. to start asking yourself, what is it that's underneath this response when you might get upset by something? Is it literal? Is it the dictionary definition, the denotation? Or is it symbolic at the deeper level, something that goes further by association? If you see a swastika, does it upset you? If you see a burning cross, what does that make you think of? Yeah, KKK in my book. Are those all white outfits with the hoods on them? I'm sure if I were African American, I would have a different association of that. Same kind of thing with the Battle of the Sexes as the Battle of the Races. I have different experiences. I will not understand in this lifetime fully what it's like to be black, to be African American, to grow up with that. And that's what we're trying to do, walking this path of empowerment, is to be fully in the individual and yet to reach for the universal, to reach for what is universally true. And so I go back to where we start and making those connections and that last piece where we connect out to all of humanity. I believe it is universal, the desire for things to be better. I believe it is universal, the desire to feel loved and safe and supported. And those are the things I desire to reach for in the relationships I have, in the connections I have, in the conversations I have, is to reach for the universal and to not take the other person's symbols and their reactions to those symbols personally myself. And maybe in that way, as we walk forward in that way, as we look at the underlying pieces and start to diffuse them, as I diffuse the energy of the Nazis appropriating the swastika, one of the things that's come up for me is it pisses me off that the Nazis did that and took such a good symbol and perverted it, made it associated with something so vile. And in so doing, took away the power that had been accumulated in the positive ways that I might use it in my life. So that I have to do this work to cleanse out that association, that symbolic interpretation. But that's the path. And the other thing is to look at what are the positive symbols that you feel most drawn to. Some people feel drawn to a particular spiritual deity. Anyone who comes to visit me, there's a picture of Christ, there's a picture of Mary, there's a statue of Mary, there's multiple statues of Ganesh. I've got other Hindu deities. I've got, St. Francis. I've got Shiva. There's a Buddha. There's, all kinds of things. And then there are crystals and other stones. And each of them have their own symbolism, their own energy vibration, and then their associations that I might have with them, like the one I'm sitting looking at here on my desk that's just a plain rock. But I was in a workshop once, and a good friend of mine was giving a talk about things that were permanent and things that were less permanent and transitory. And I don't remember the whole point that she was trying to make at the time. But while she's making that point about things that were permanent, and she passed these stones around and we could each take one, I just tapped mine gently on the desk without any conscious purpose. I wasn't trying to do what happened, and it cracked in half. Which, of course, brings me back to where we started with the egg and cracking an egg for breakfast. But for me, in that context, that has become a symbol, which is why it's sitting on my desk, that I can accomplish the seeming impossible or what others might define as impossible when I choose to be present with what I'm with. I was with this particular rock. It wanted me to tap it on the table, and it decided to split in half. And so, well, I'm going to extend that as a symbol for you. What are the rocks that you can crack now? What are the symbols that you can open up and find a new meaning for in your own life? And that would be my prayer for you on this Easter day. Because as we do that, as we take the symbols that are in us, that we connect with and make them more conscious, then we can make them more from choice rather than from past association, past experience. And that's how we move forward into our empowerment. And that's how we move past, well, part of what bothers me still about, again, not that I lose sleep about it, but when I think about it, about Christianity, is how much they focus on the death and the suffering, when theoretically their message is all about the resurrection. And yet the Catholic churches, every single one of them, has that crucifix there with Christ up on the cross. And even lots of Protestant denominations have the cross up there as their symbol. And again, symbol. Symbol. So, may you find the symbols that serve you and empower you and awaken you. And let's do some channeling. As always, just allow your breathing to deepen while I do the toning to bring in our guest for today. Hello, dear ones. This is Yeshua, or Jesus, as you would know me. Come to be with you today. Happy rebirth day. Happy rebirth day. I would, well, first just offer you love. So open. Open yourself and let yourself receive and feel loved and honored. Because you are. You are brothers and sisters to me. You are family. And would that you could feel that in every moment of your life. And would that everyone else could feel that in every moment of their life, because the strife would go out of the world. If we could truly know, if you could truly feel each other as family, there would not be the struggle that there is in the world. Well, or perhaps there would, depending on what your association, what your symbolism is with family. But definitely there would not be if it were soul family rather than blood family. And so start there. Start there with love. Start there with love. And start with loving self. Because you cannot give to others what you do not have. You cannot love others more than you love yourself. And until you love yourself, well, you cannot love others. You may be attracted to them, but that does not mean you love them. You may desire them or lust for them, but that does not mean you love them. Love is beyond simple attraction, desire, or lust. Love is beyond all of that. Not that there cannot be love in those things, but love is much more than that. And I would say to you, do not believe that I died to save you from yourself. Do not believe that I died to save you at all, but definitely do not believe that I died to save you from yourself, from your failings, from your sins. You are divine. You have always been divine. You will always be divine. And you do not need saving. Unless by saving you mean remembering. Remembering who and what you are. Remembering the power that you have. Remembering the light and the love that you are. But that is not. That is not me saving you. It is you remembering yourself. You may feel lost in any given moment. You may feel lost throughout your life. But it is only because you are perceiving that moment or every moment through the filters of limited perception, through the filters of the knowledge of good and evil, which another way to say that is through the filters of judgment. And what is the ultimate judgment? The judgment of right and wrong, good and evil. There is neither. They do not exist. There is only divinity playing an enormous play. An enormous play. And so, it's time for you to remember that you are the actor, you are the actress, and you are the character you're playing. But first, you are the actor, the actress. And the fact that you have played so well that you have forgotten how to experience yourself as the actor, you have forgotten how to take off the symbols of your character, the masks that you have played, the roles that you have taken on. And so your rebirthing into your light, your rebirthing into your divinity, is merely about remembering that you are not this body, although it is an expression of you. You are not your experiences, although they are expressions of you. You are not your past, although those were experiences of you, expressions of you. You are so much more. And so now, if you would, open in to a greater love for yourself. Open into a greater willingness to know your true essence. Open into a greater possibility to be your divine awesomeness. So, remember, dear ones, this path is simple. It is not easy. The drink of forgetfulness is quite potent. The choice of remembering is step by step. That's why they call it the path. May you remember yourself fully. In the closest thing to matching immediately that you can find. But remember, you are divine, fully, regardless of how much you experience yourself as divine. You will remember. It is only a question of when and of what steps to take to get there. But in every step, I will be with you. We will be with you. That entire team, your Mother Earth, your angels and teachers, and even these compatriots in this community and of the light workers and indeed of all humanity are with you. Open to let that support in. And open to let your light out. Much love, dear ones. Namaste. All right. Well, thank you, Yeshua. And thank you to my friends, each and every one of you, and co-creators. And thank you, Doug. And you can start those chimes whenever you're ready. Remember, I cannot do it without you. You never know which way we're going to go, where we're going to go until we get there. I always appreciate your presence, your energy, your good wishes, and your feedback. Let me know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like more of. And I will be back same time, same place next week. I hope you'll join me, and I wish you a marvelous rest of your Easter and week in between. Namaste, my friends.